You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 17 April. Local inflation data for March, due 10 a.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb offices in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Jimmy Moyaha. The AfriMat update, I mean, the little stock that could. It's not knocking it out the park, but I mean, it's double digit, which is important. Charles Savage from Purple Group, strong results. They swing back into profit, although a lot of that profit, of course, is non-trading profit. And then we're chatting with Chief Economist at the Development Bank of Southern Africa. They've launched a journal on infrastructure development. I'm curious what that is and its purpose. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. SA living annuities no longer have unlimited offshore exposure. Investment companies may not invest more than 45% of their assets under management offshore. I think that comes as a surprise to, well, everybody. Business Day, IMF warns SA's medium-term prospects are weakest in decades. Fund has cut the 2024 growth number to just 0.9%. That's below the SARB number of 1.2% forecast. Morning markets, yours was mixed. S&P was down 0.2%. Nasdaq green, but 0.04% higher, so a couple of points. East is mixed. Sydney up 0.6%. Tokyo down 0.2%. Hong Kong down 0.2%. And Tencent off 0.1%. Commodities, all red. Gold, 2,398. Brent, 89.50. Platinum, 966. Palladium, 1,026. Rand, 19 exactly. Bitcoin, 64,000 exactly. Top 40 opening call, a bit of green, 90 points to the upside. That just over 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Moyaha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. I said in the intro there, the AfriMat trading update, it's for the year ending February. HEPS up 11% to 16%. I mean, it's not exactly knocking it out the park, but I mean, it puts it on a PE of around 12. And in, you know, in South African environment, SA Inc. stock, I think 11 to 16 is a number we would probably quite happily take.
Yeah, morning, Simon. The AfriMat numbers, obviously, with the mandatory requirements from the JSE, we kind of had an indication of this when we saw the preliminary numbers when they came out with interims. We expected that we'd see a rather strong performance. And I remember when I caught up with the CEO, Andries van Heerden, last week, we discussed the fact that the Lafarge deal has now gone through all of the regulatory hurdles it needs to go through. It's just a matter of finalizing that, but it's gotten the regulatory approvals it needs. And I actually then spoke to him and asked around just the thinking going forward is, are they acquiring more businesses? How's the business going to grow from here? And they said, look, we have one business. We've acquired a really good asset here. We've been doing really well in tough economic conditions. We've managed to just keep our cost overheads down and just be sort of a consistent deliverer of results. So this was very much in line with expectations that they would deliver a strong set of numbers. And I think going forward, that's going to be a key point for South African companies, international companies. We're seeing that we're going through earnings season in the US and guys are sort of kind of missing estimates here and there or forecasting a little lower in a tough environment. And tougher environments historically is something South African companies have always been able to deal with quite well. We're used to operating in these environments. So credit to Andries and his team. And it's nice to see that we're getting headline earnings per share up between 20 and 26%. And this is even before the Lafarge acquisition is fully integrated into the business.
Yeah, of course, Lafarge not in these numbers. And I take your point. South African companies, we're used to tough. That's the new normal for us. South African traders and investors, perhaps less so. Top 40, 2.1% down yesterday. Resi down 3.5%. I mean, the JSE woke up and chose violence, and there was almost nowhere to hide.
Absolutely, and that was quite the telling tale. I mean, if you had a look at Asian markets as well, they were also in the red yesterday. US markets were slightly flat to marginally up or down, depending on which side of the market you were looking at. But the JSE yesterday just decided that, you know, no one's going to be spared from this bloodbath. And I think it comes off a lot of the sentiment that we're seeing globally as well. There's a bit of a risk-off sentiment that's playing out as a result of those growing tensions in the Middle East. We're seeing that the likes of Bitcoin and Ether, the cryptos are probably playing out a lot more towards the halving that's coming up at the end of the week. And some of that component is also down to the risk sentiment. But if we look at the JSE stocks, I mean, they really, really did not want to have any shred of a good day yesterday. Even the ones that did have a good day were up anywhere from 1% to 3%, and the ones that had a bad day were north of 3%. I think of someone like Transaction Capital, for example, that managed to go through that unbundling last week. Everything held out quite well from the unbundling. Yesterday lost 15%, trading at 2 Rand 40, so no one was spared from yesterday's red day. And whether or not that'll turn around today remains to be seen. I think we might still have a bit more bearishness in us from a market's perspective. I think the overall sentiment at the moment is a very confused and lost one. Markets have been under pressure as a result of those inflation and interest rate prints. And those probably will continue to see themselves in the market, but we'll have to keep an eye on that and see if any positivity would drive some good volatility within the market.
Yeah, and I was looking at the Transaction Capital We Buy Cars. If you held it at the LDT last Wednesday to get We Buy Cars, you're now technically underwater. We'll leave it there. Jimmy Moyoha, independent analyst, always appreciate the early morning.
When you stay invested over time in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management, at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting now with Charles Savage, CEO, Purple Group. They're, of course, parents of Easy Equities, amongst things. Disclaimer up front, I hold shares in Purple Group. So, results for 6 months, revenue up 29.3%, HEPS up 192.2%, swinging back into a six-month profit. Charles, appreciate the early morning. Lots of big stories in these results. One that really stands out for me is costs, actually slightly down as all other metrics such as revenue and clients rose. You're getting efficiencies, I imagine, and truthfully, perhaps just a little bit better at onboarding and managing clients, and therefore keeping the costs actually slightly down.
Yeah, morning, Simon, and thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's we've been managing that cost line from day one. I mean, if anybody's watched our financials, we talked about our cost to serve, for a long time now. And if I go back a decade, which Easy Equity is almost a decade old, that cost was around 600, 700 Rand to serve a customer per year. And you saw in this financials, it was down to 80 Rand per customer for the 6 months. So annualized at 160 Rand. And you know, you've got two kind of attack weapons to build a strong income statement. The one is, focus on costs, and the other one is focus on revenue. And if you get both right, you create a wonderful business. But the only one you can really control is costs. And so for, the last 2.5 years, we've had a very sharp focus on costs. We've talked about it very openly. You can't abandon costs easily or quickly. You've got to, replace those services or infrastructure with more efficient or effective ways of doing things. And so the team have done a great job over the last 2 years to bring that cost number down to a point. And this is not the last time we'll post reduced cost to serve. But the costs are definitely under control, and the guy's doing a good job of creating an efficient organization.
Yeah, and cost going down is always the right metric. And of course, 10 years old in October, if memory serves. Active clients on Easy up 12.5% at 944,000. Total clients up 21 at 2.1 million. There's a lot of clients there who have come through the front door but aren't doing any activity. Is there much that you can do to gently sort of probe them into becoming active, even if just with small amounts?
Yeah, it's interesting. The average person, customer takes 12 days to onboard. Mm-hmm. And beyond those 12 days, you kind of lose the opportunity to do it. But what we're finding is that for a large majority of very young customers, so customers under the age of, let's call it 21, or maybe even 25, their economic position doesn't allow for them to invest. And so they pitch up years later when they've now got a job and they're interested in investing. So that we do get conversion from those registration cohorts beyond the years. Not as many as we'd like. We've tried several strategies to kind of ignite that and to nudge them into investing. But when you look around at the sort of competitive landscape, we still have around about a 50% conversion rate, which I think is as much as we can expect. There's not much more you can pull out of it. I mean, the highest we've ever been was a 60% conversion rate. So, you know, we do keep retargeting those customers. When we introduce a new service or a new functionality, then we'll retarget them. But you know, I don't think there's more value in finding new registrations than trying to convert old ones.
When we chatted last year, late October, early November, it was, as you'd introduced, Thrive. There was a absolute storm with respect to the people who were storming. It did seem to be a bit of a teacup because we're seeing the active clients growing. I'm assuming you didn't see any noticeable client exits. And in truth, Thrive is generating some revenue. We can see non-activity revenue is now, 57.3% of revenue.
Yeah. Thrive's done three things for us. Two, we expected. One, we had no idea, but it's a welcome surprise. I mean, the first is it put us front of mind with our customers every month. You know, people had kind of, because of the recession and tough economic environment, people had stopped thinking about easy equities. And because Thrive encourages you to think about easy equities and fundamentally do something, either pitch up with your time or pitch up with your money, and then you avoid the fee, 35% more people are pitching up every month as a result, since we launched Thrive. And, you know, the number that I really enjoy telling everyone about is that in February, we posted an all-time record in deposits at over R1 billion in 1 month of deposits. Now, if we go back to October when we introduced it, that was about 550, 600 million. So significant improvement in the number of depositors and the value of deposits in that period from October to February. So that's the first impact point. The second one is, there are large swathes of customers, hundreds of thousands of customers who really value the platform that we offer them and are quite prepared to pay for it, I'm not going to come pitch. I'll pitch up when I want to pitch up, and I'll pay for the platform R25 a month if I don't pitch up. And they're very happy to do that, and they've obviously looked at the competitive landscape and realized it's still a hell of a good deal. So we earn money from that group of cohort, whereas we earn deposits, if you like, from those who want to avoid the fee, both economically beneficial for us. The third one, which was much more interesting but not planned, is that the entire industry started talking about fees in October when we launched Thrive. You can't talk about our fees in isolation of an industry. You have to talk about, okay, cool, so Easy Equities has this fee. What does Standard Bank have? What does ABSA have? What does F&B have, et cetera? And because the fee debate has came into the public consciousness, people have looked at their fee structures, and we are now winning pre-Thrive. We were winning two customers from the competitors for every one that we lost. So we had a net inflow. Today, we win four customers for every one that we lose. And so we are winning at a double the rate of from competitors than we were pre-Thrive. And it's fundamentally because this debate about fees, which we've never chosen to have. I mean, you've known us for a decade. We've never gone into the market to talk about fees. We've said the most important thing we're doing is easy access to the stock market, you know, available to everyone. We've never said the cheapest or, you know, and beaten up our competitors on fees. But this fee debate has beaten up our competitors for themselves, because people are now looking at fee structures in tough economic times, realizing the cheapest place to go to put your investments and the most functional is easy equities. And so we're winning customers from competitors at twice the rate we were pre-Thrive.
Of those 944,000 active accounts, how many of them are saying more than happy to pay the 25 a month rather than do the activity?
It's interesting, Simon. It's about 50-50. But remember, there are larger groups of customers who are exempt. So if you're under 21, you're exempt.
Yeah.
And if you're over 65, you're exempt. So those two groups are exempt. And then there are other exemptions. One that was your suggestion. If your tax-free savings account is fully funded, you're also exempt. Just an interesting stat, because that was your idea, not ours. The number of tax-free savings accounts that are now fully funded is 91% higher than this time last year as a result of Thrive. So how's that for a cool little outcome? So we can thank you for that one.
Carry on.
Yeah, so the customers of the 50-50 that remain, they don't all pay every month or don't pay every month. They pitch up when they want to, and they so it looks like, and it's only 5 months in, it looks like people are comfortable paying 3 to 4 months a year, the Thrive fee, and pitching up for the balance of the year, which is a perfect outcome for us. We get a little bit of extra revenue from you when you don't pitch up, but when you do pitch up and you're pitching up more often, you're putting more money into your account and looking after your investments.
A quick last question, and I don't know if it's a quick answer, but looking, I think it's page 19 of the results, looking at the different cohorts, and you show this data, which is fascinating. The 2020 cohorts, which of course is the big pandemic boom, a significant number of your base, their client asset growth seems to be going sideways for the last couple of years. The only year it's ahead of is the 2016 year. Is there something weird happening there? Because that's, of course, where the pandemic folks, they came in en masse, they bought Sasol at $20, made a fortune, and sort of getting maybe, I don't know, going sideways.
Yeah, look, that's, remember, it's a very young customer cohort. They're on average, they're well below the age of 30, so they haven't kind of got into their own economic growth story just yet. But yeah, and so they just don't have the capacity to deposit in tough times. So they haven't gone away. They still have investments. They still pitch up and manage those investments. But yeah, they're suffering. They're suffering from the economic environment and finding the cash to invest. And so, if we fast forward a year, interest rates starting to come down, you should see that big cohort starting to lift its asset base significantly.
Charles Savage, CEO of Purple Group, always appreciate the early morning time. And that's our question today on the Twitters and LinkedIn. The stock's up, 80% or so, but there's about, more or less, since the trading update of last week. Massive turn. We're asking, are you a happy Purple investor? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in StanLib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. StanLib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Zephyr Nhleko. He's Chief Economist, Development Bank of Southern Africa. Zephyr, appreciate the time today. You launched last week your Development Bank of Southern Africa Journal of Infrastructure Development. What's the sort of content and idea behind this journal?
Thank you, Simon. This is a very exciting launch for us. We found an incredible gap in terms of infrastructure research that is formal research. Mm-hmm. So we should close this gap by setting up a proper credited and peer-reviewed infrastructure journal for the continent. We narrowed it down from the traditional economic development type journals to specifically infrastructure and focus on infrastructure and infrastructure-related research.
And importantly, this is continent-wide, not just South Africa or even not just Southern Africa, but you're looking into the rest of the continent as well.
That's right, yeah. All the credible journals that you can think about are not from the continent in Africa. Mm-hmm. But the other important thing for us was the high cost of publishing articles. You have scholars, some of them are students who are trying to publish their work, but it's just prohibitively expensive. I mean, anything between $51 to $45,000, depending on the type of journal that you want to. So it's extremely, so we thought, look, let's put together a journal and let's establish an open source platform for both publishing and accessing the work at a very, in fact, for free.
And you make an important point there around scholars, because of course this would be for governments, for state-owned enterprises, for investors, I mean, for everyone in the sector. I'm thinking, you know, if I'm in construction, this is going to be important to me as much as if I'm a financier, or as you make out, I might be a student doing research.
This is true. The colloquium itself attracts development finance professionals, the policymakers, academia, and people, you know, students, as I said. So it's open across the board. And as you know, there is nobody that has authority on knowledge. So the more people you involve, the better for the conversation.
That's actually a great point. I suppose in a sense, this is guarding against poor data, or in many cases, probably a lack of data, but also helping to understand the bigger trends. And, you know, I might read about something that's happening in, I don't know, Namibia, Nigeria, or wherever the case may be, Cote d'Ivoire, and take insight from that. And it really is spreading it and making sure that accurate information is getting as wide a voice as possible.
Yes. The DPSA's mandate, as you might know, is to promote economic development and growth, but it is also to facilitate human and institutional capacity building. Mm-hmm. So that's an important aspect of our mandate, where we say, look, we need to have proper data, to have proper research, proper analysis. And for us as a bank, it's important that when we do our corporate strategy, we anchor that, you know, well-researched, proper information and knowledge. And it helps us to reestablish ourselves as a knowledge bank. You might know that in the 80s, for example, the DBSA played a very crucial role in the policy space in South Africa, reshaping, you know, policy either in poverty or regional development, land reform, and things like this. So we would like to maintain and reestablish that position to make sure that we become a reliable source of insight, and that is helpful not just to ourselves, but to others as well. And that will facilitate, you know, new thinking and inspire innovation in the infrastructure space.
I take your point, and particularly around the Development Bank of South Africa, in a sense, reclaiming its status as that role player around development, around policy, around financing, and so much more. And truthfully, in many senses, expanding it. What always strikes me, it's the Development Bank of Southern Africa. We kind of think that you're our bank, our development bank, but your remit has always been broader than just the South African economy.
No, it is. The very foundation of the DBSA was to deal with, if you remember, the old Bantustans, to deal with the economies there and ensure that there is proper development that takes place from an infrastructure point of view, but also from this human and institutional capacity building point of view. And you are right, it has taken an African perspective. The mandate is an African mandate. Although we, at all material times, we are required to have at least 60% exposure in South Africa, but 40% of our exposure is in the rest of the continent.
Okay, that's actually quite a chunky number. I hadn't realized it was quite so much. We'll leave it there. That's Zefu Nhleko, Chief Economist, Development Bank of Southern Africa. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Lars Sanke yesterday. He, of course, from PSG. Talking ideal outcomes for fixed income, capital protection, beating inflation, low volatility. We asked if you were happy with your fixed income fund, because getting all three of those doesn't always necessarily make a good fund. Almost half said you have no income funds. The rest was split between, you know what, actually not working as expected. The rest of you saying doing great. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and X. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. FinTech Household Resilience Index.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.